think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think
class war.
Class war, the only war.
We want to just quickly send a nice friendly message to the Fraternal Order of Police in Philadelphia.
This is an anti-Nazi song.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Rebel Beat, a Firebrand Records podcast. My name is Aaron. So happy to have you with us for this, our September 2018 edition. On today's show, we're going to be bringing you into the studio and into the mind of the legendary Abenaki Indigenous filmmaker and musician Alanis Obomsawin. Alanis is 85 years young and has a prolific career with over 50 documentaries under her belt. While many know her as an inspiring documentarian, fewer know about her as a musician, until now. Her album Bush Lady, originally recorded at CBC in the 80s, was just reissued this year on Constellation Records, and we got a chance to have an intimate and emotional conversation with her about this brilliant work. That's coming up in just a little bit. We've also got our Turn It Up segment later in the program, and some very exciting announcements. But first, a new take on an Italian anti-fascist classic from Tom Waits and Mark Ribot. This is Bella Ciao.
One fine morning, I woke up early. Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao. One fine morning, I woke up early to find the fascists at my door. Oh, partigiano, please take me with you. Bella ciao, bella ciao, goodbye, beautiful. Oh, partigiano, please take me with you. I'm not afraid anymore. Partigiano, bella ciao, goodbye, beautiful. Bury me upon that mountain beneath the shadow of the flowers. So are the people, passing. Bella ciao, goodbye, beautiful. So all the people passing, can say, oh, what a beautiful flower. This is the flower of the a partisan who died for freedom. This is the flower of the partisan who died for freedom.
Welcome back to The Rebel Beat, a monthly podcast of radical music and radical politics. We just heard Tom Waits and Mark Ribot doing Bella Ciao, an urgent yet somber anti-fascist tune for our times, originally sung by Italian partisans fighting Mussolini in Italy just prior to World War II. Of course, if you want to get in touch with us here on The Rebel Beat, you can find us online. We're at rebelbeatradio.com. We're on Facebook at Rebel Beat Radio, Twitter at Rebel Beat Radio. We're even up on Instagram. Or if you're old school and you want to shoot us an email, it's rebel@ckut.ca. Do love hearing from you, so drop us a line. Also, if you like The Rebel Beat, please support us. Our Patreon page is patreon.com/rebelbeatradio. Look, it totally feels weird to make this announcement every show, hat in hand, asking all our wonderful listeners to support this podcast. This podcast is always going to be free to listen to, but the fact is, it costs money, and every dollar it costs comes out of my pocket. I've got no sponsors, no mattress companies or meal kits trying to sell you shit. I've just got a bunch of great supporters on Patreon who are willing to kick in just a little bit every month to help cover the costs and maybe even help us grow a bit too. So we get about 1,000 listens on average per month. It's modest, but I'm also pretty proud of that. Now, if all of you 1,000 people were to give just $1 a month, and I really hope this podcast is worth at least $1 to you, we can not only cover all the costs, the web hosting, phone bills, equipment upgrades, but I might even be able to start putting out the show at least twice a month. I know not all of you are going to give, and that's totally fine, but those of you who can, I really hope that you're going to consider it. And, you know, we'd love you all regardless. Anyways, you can hit pause on the podcast right now. I'm not going anywhere. The Rebel Beat isn't going anywhere. And you can head over to patreon.com/rebelbeatradio and make a donation. Or you can also make a one-time donation of any amount by sending a PayPal transfer to rebel@ckut.ca. Thank you so much for your support. And now on with the show. I also have another exciting announcement, and that's that I'm launching a new podcast on October 3rd, and it's called Changing on the Fly. It's a podcast all about the intersections between hockey and radical politics. So some of you have been listening to The Rebel Beat for a while might have picked up on the fact that besides being a big music fan, I'm also a huge sports fan, and specifically a huge hockey fan. Maybe you heard our interview with Dave Zirin, the radical sports writer from last year. I'm going to link to that in the show notes, but that was just kind of a taste of some of my sports and radical politics obsession. But look, we live in urgent times, and sports have now become central to the fight for hearts, minds, and social change in North America. We saw this when Trump and his NFL owner buddies doubled down on insulting black football players who refused to stand for the national anthem in protest of racism and police brutality.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of up the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
I think it's crucial that radicals be more invested in sports because millions of people are paying attention to them. And frankly, we can't let racists, misogynists, and homophobes claim these spaces. We need to take them back, and that's what Changing on the Fly is all about. Now, don't worry, the Rebel Beat isn't going anywhere, but more podcasts equals more radical politics in your ears. Here's a trailer for Changing on the Fly, but you can subscribe right now to the show in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Here we go.
Hey, Johnson back to Fortino. Fortino rolling puck down low. Shot scores. It's Poulin again. Canada wins gold in overtime.
Welcome to Changing on the Fly, a podcast about hockey, politics, and social change. I'm your host, Aaron Lakoff. Like blades on the ice, Changing on the Fly cuts right to the heart of today's most important issues in hockey. We go beyond the stats and pundits to bring you hard-hitting analysis on the politics of the game we love. From taking on racism and sexism in the locker room, to looking at the impacts of climate change on hockey, we amplify voices from the margins and bring them to center ice. Stay with us.
No one can tell that kid, well, no, blacks, you know, come on now. It's PK Subban. That's where you guys really started popping up. They could turn back and say, oh, please, listen, we invented the slap shot.
For Sidney Crosby to take a step back and say this doesn't affect us is essentially erasing Canada of its own absolutely violent racist past. I mean, this entire country was founded on the genocide of Indigenous peoples.
Not the left-wing pickle media, bleeding hearts, guys. What are you, nuts?
Continues on this program where he basically kind of proclaims what's good about Canada, what's bad about Canada, where he celebrates a particular kind of Canadian masculine identity.
You're right that, you know, you don't really see as much of a social movement, you know, you don't have your Colin Kaepernick, so to speak. But you do have, you know, the CWHL has its first transgender player this year. The N had one last year. So there are little movements like that. But in general, I just find women's hockey such a more inclusive space.
All right, welcome back. Once again, that was a trailer for my new podcast, Changing on the Fly. Check out the website at changingonthefly.podcast.wordpress.com. And if you want to support that show and get a bunch of the episodes in advance, you can hit up patreon.com/changingonthefly. And of course, the Rebel Beat is a proud member of the Channel Zero Network of anarchist podcasts. Check them out at channelzeronetwork.com. One of the other podcasts in that network is Trouble from our good friends at Submedia. And the latest episode they put out, called And You Don't Stop, Hip Hop as Resistance, is perfect for all you Rebel Beat listeners. So there's a little surprise here. I caught up with Frank from Submedia. Frank used to come on regularly on the Rebel Beat to tell us a little bit about it. All right. So in talking about music and resistance, and of course the Channel Zero Network, I'm here with another fellow Channel Zero Network broadcaster, podcaster, Frank from Submedia. How you doing, Frank?
Well, I'm just waking up from a nap.
You sound it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we had the world premiere of our new Trouble episode, Trouble 15, it's called, And You Don't Stop, Hip Hop as Resistance, last night. And so we were out partying with some live hip hop right after the screening. So I'm a little bit tired.
Nice. So this episode, Hip Hop as Resistance, the new episode of Trouble, it's up now. People can listen to it, I guess, through the Channel Zero Network or watch it on the Submedia page. But tell us a little bit about this new episode. I think the Rebel Beat listeners are going to be really excited about it.
Yeah, so many people in our, you know, well, many people, just a few people in our crew, our big hip hop heads, me included. You know, I can count like a 30-year love affair with this musical, or I should say cultural movement. And as radicals, as anarchists, we understand that it's very hard sometimes to find hip hop that agrees with our politics, being that the radio dial and SoundCloud and YouTube are awash and there's such garbage. Hip-hop, and we wanted to sort of big up some of the grassroots MCs that we know and love, but also make the connection that from the very beginning, hip-hop was also like about grassroots organizing, you know, and we give a shout out to the Zulu Nation, who, you know, enacted the four elements of hip-hop, graffiti, MCing, DJ, and breakdancing. Oh, and the fifth element, sorry, street knowledge. And how they use hip-hop as a way to sort of like settle street-level beefs with all the gang warfare that was happening in the Bronx at that time, and sort of take it to today and talking to people like Antloke from Savage Fam, for instance, who not only has an incredible hip-hop project called Savage Fam, as I said, but also that project itself is about going to the rest, going to the reservation, and mentoring kids, get them not to get into involved in drugs, getting to prevent suicides. Mm-hmm. And he himself is talking about how important it is to do small shows in communities where usually like radical stuff doesn't really happen. And he talks about his own experience in Standing Rock performing live out there. And so we wanted to kick off the season with something that was going to be not light, but definitely something that was going to be more attached to culture, because we had not really touched about radical culture. And hopefully this won't be the last episode we do about hip-hop, because I think we're just scratching the surface, and I think people are going to love it.
Welcome back to the Rebel Beat of Firebrand Records podcast. We're going to get into our feature interview now with Alanis Obomsawin. Now, if you don't already know Alanis, then that's totally fine. She's an indigenous Abenaki filmmaker and musician. She was born in New Hampshire, but grew up on her home reserve of Odanak here in Quebec. In her 85 years on this earth, she's made over 50 films with the National Film Board of Canada, including her seminal film on the Mohawk Uprising and Oka Crisis in 1990, called Ganasatagi, 270 Years of Resistance. We're going to hear the story of how her album from the 1980s fell into obscurity, how it was rediscovered and re-released, plus some of the stories behind many of her songs. I rarely say this, but her album Bush Lady is one of those albums that you kind of have to listen to in its entirety to fully appreciate, so you should definitely go do that. But here's the first song from her album called Odana, and then we'll get into the interview. This is Alanis Obomsawin.
Que ma hum nunga kistanko ak odi aska miwi odi aska miwi odi aska miwi akwi Titi kita mukan kazal dami odana kuksa onso wida onda wamba naki odana kinisi. Tali kasi on kisi tali peka on madim miwi din madim miwi din hota Makwa nyon tita nasa tagwa ngai. da Indi Alcigante Cook Mini Osa Inuk.
My name is Alanis Obamsawin, and I am a Wambanaki woman, or a Beneki. And the village that I was raised and where I come from is called Odanak, and it's like approximately halfway from Montreal and Quebec on the South Shore by the San Francis River.
A lot of people know you as Alanis Obamsawin, the filmmaker. You've produced, I think at this point, over 50 films here at the NFB, but you're also a musician. And tell us a little bit about Alanis, the musician.
I don't know if I'd call myself a musician, but I sing, and for a very long time, like all my life, really. But before making films, this was my main occupation, was singing and telling stories and touring in many classrooms across the country. And the main reason was really I was very active in revolting against the system of education that well designed were teaching in the classroom about how we were savages and very bad things about ourselves, and that our language was Satan's language, and that we were bad people. And so it created, and they succeeded in creating a lot of hate towards our people for many, many generations. And when I understood that as a young girl, I really revolted, and I wanted to make a difference and find a way to, what could I do? And it came to me that I thought the children should hear another story. And this is how I began to become public, and with my singing and telling stories and talking about history. I started with scouts, traveling with scouts and playing with them and showing them games. And then eventually I came to the classroom, and once I started that, there was so much demand that I did hundreds of schools across the country here.
You were a musician, a singer, you're playing music before you got into filmmaking with the NFB. Did you intend to keep playing music as well throughout your career?
I was not going to stop what I was doing. And I told the people here at the NFB that I was, that the role was very important to me. But when I got into films, I got so excited, and to see the power of the image, and you know, these films can do work, you're not even there, and it's reaching the world. It was so powerful, I was amazed. I didn't know anything about filmmaking. So I really felt that this was an incredible tool, and to make sure that to serve our people with it, that was how I did all this work.
What about music, though? How do you see the power of music? Of course, there's no image to it, but do you see music as being as powerful?
All art is powerful. You know, a painting can change you with the way you think. A sculpture, a song, a chant. It's a wonderful way to educate. And I know that through my singing, I've revealed our history and where we're at and what's happening to our people over the years. And I find that it's very powerful.
And so we're going to be talking about your album, Bush Lady, which was just reissued by Constellation Records here in Montreal. And so this album, it was originally recorded in CBC, I believe in the 1980s. Yeah. Do you remember what was going through your mind or how it felt during those first few recordings at the CBC as you were performing this music?
It was, you know, first of all, I was happy that they decided to do the album. And then when the album came out and I saw my picture, the way it was there, I was disturbed by it. But I don't mean to say anything awkward about the musicians, because they were wonderful and they did a beautiful job. And then I redid it in 1988. I asked for help with money, and the CBC was kind enough to let me use the track, but I redid Bush Lady. And then I came out with my own album. And I was so happy, because I thought, now, you know, I think I've been abused for a long time in the past. Like, people were taping me and using, you know, I would never get paid for it. And so I wanted to do my own and be the boss of it, the reality. And I was very happy once the album was finished. I remember walking all the way home from the studio, which was way down east, quite far, with my big drum. I just walked home. I felt, oh, for once, you know, I decide for myself and all that. And I was going to be distributing it. And then I realized, like, I had to go to these stores and sell the album and the cassette. Then I would have to go and collect when they would have sold. Some people would say, oh, Alanis, they have no more album. You better go and sell more. So then I would go and collect. And sometimes people would say, oh, I'm so sorry, the manager is not here. Would you mind coming back? You know, and I find that so humiliating. Mm. I thought, the hell with this. I packed everything in boxes, and I didn't even go and collect. You know, I said, I don't want to go and peddle like that. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. Yeah. So it was my own fault that the distribution wasn't done properly. Mm. So I just forgot about it.
And then so you forgot about it. The album comes out in the late 80s, and it kind of almost fell into obscurity in the public's eye for a few decades, until just a few years ago. And then what happened?
It's because a man here who works here, Frédéric Savard, was in one of the offices, and he sees my album. You know, like, there's one there, for instance. And he asked this woman, what's this? And she said, oh, this is an album, Alanis, this years ago. So he comes by my office, and he told me, I wasn't here, and he sees the album. He says, I almost stole it. But he said, I thought, I better wait. So he sees me a few hours later, and he says, can I buy your album? I said, buy, you can, I'll give it to you. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I didn't think any more about that. And then he comes back and he says, oh, my God, I listened to it. It's so beautiful. And he starts praising it. And it was nice for me to hear. And he said the first person who bought it was Redwan, who's a famous singer and a fantastic musician. And he was also a commissioner at Le Guess Who. Mm. And he told Fred he wanted me to go and sing at this festival. I thought, are you crazy? You know, like, I haven't done concerts for 30 years. Like, I sing still, but maybe one chant or one song here and there for friends or for special ceremonies, and that's it. Mm. So I thought, oh, my God, can I do this? Have I got a voice? I was very worried. Finally, I said yes. And I ended up going to Utrecht, to Holland, mm. to do a concert. And, man, was I ever worried and afraid. Mm-hmm. And once I started to sing, then it was all right. And they were so nice to me, and it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that they could love me so much. Mm-hmm. So, and since then I get a lot of demands, which I cannot do all these things, but I'm going to do a concert at the end of September.
Hey how, hey how, how, hey how, how, hey how, hey how, hey how. Hey how, hey how, how, hey how, how, hey how, how, hey how, hey how, hey how, 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 how. Hey, Bush Lady. Come to the city.
Well, let's talk about a few of the songs on the album. So Bush Lady, of course, is the title track of the album. And I think it's really powerful, you know, this storytelling of an indigenous woman who comes into the city. Tell us a little bit more about that song and the story there.
I wrote this song in the early 60s. You have to understand that 1960 in itself, many things happen all over the world, including for ourselves. That's the year we became recognized as Canadian citizens in our own country, not before 1960. So we start to organize, and all the people who were, like I was called an activist, all the people in different parts of the country who were doing things, we all, you know, found out about each other, and organizations were created politically, and we start traveling. I had never been anywhere except in this province. And we discover how rich we were in terms of tradition, culture, language. We start comparing the voices of all the different languages. It was so unbelievable. It was just a very important time for all of us, indigenous people. And I also realized, I knew about this province in terms of how we were treated. And I was one of them too. And then across the country, it was so awful. And on the skid rows of the country, a lot of our people were there and still are in a lot of ways. And a lot of women being taken advantage of and abused and maltreated and called names and disappearing and killed and raped. This was it. And this is when I wrote Bush Lady. Yeah. And at that time, there were several problems politically. For instance, if an indigenous woman married outside her tribe, like her people, she would be taken off the list. Like she would lose the number, she would lose the fact that she belonged to a group, a nation, because if she married a white person in particular, that's it. She was no longer, as if you can change who you are. But this was the law in terms of the government. Mm-hmm. So a lot of women did lose their status and lost, if they own a house or property at the reserve level, they had to part with it, either sell it or give it away. And that's it. They were legally, they could say, you're not welcome here anymore. So can you imagine what that has done to the people for so many generations? And then you also had the opposite. If an indigenous man married a white woman, she became native. Right. That was the law. So can you imagine in the village, at the reserve level, what that was doing amongst the people inside? Those who were really in blood indigenous were outside, consider you're white now, and the white woman who was coming in was considered an indigenous woman. Mm. So just that alone, just think of what that did to our people. Mm. And this was also the same for the generations coming up. If the mother lost her status, her children could not become. There was only a change in 1985 when they said all the women who lost their status are going to get it back. So there was a change there. Now there's another change. They've tried to get in another generation. But just that alone, that bloody number that you had or you didn't have made a difference in your life. Right. You were not accepted in your own people. With your own. And this is why when I say to Bush Lady, do you have a number? Anybody who's indigenous know what that means. And what the trouble and the pain and the exclusion of our people. And that's the story of Bush Lady that I want to honor.
Hey, did you hear? You know that Bush Lady? She's on the main street, drinking, sleeping on the sidewalk. Hey, that's me. I'm the bush lady. See? I'm beautiful.
The song, I think, is really powerful because for me, even walking around, you know, the downtown of Montreal today, you can still see so many of the issues that you touch on in that song that, you know, you wrote in the 60s. And there's still, of course, this this fight for justice for missing and murdered Indigenous women. How do you see this song now in the present context, maybe when you're in downtown Montreal? And
it makes me feel very sad. That aspect of our life hasn't changed much, because there's a lot of wonderful changes that's happening to education. There's a lot of good things happening, but I don't see it for our people on the street. And I feel after 30 years, this song is still very much part of the history. Mm-hmm. And I just want our people who are thinking they have to service these people who really hate them. I want them to know how beautiful they are. And they don't have to be underground like that and be treated the way they are treated. I want them to try and learn what their gifts are and go by that and feel the best part of themselves and not allow people to make them feel like they do. This is why Bush Lady has a role. Mm. And I love these women. I just feel that it has to stop. But it is our own job to make sure that our women feel different, start looking at themselves and find themselves, the good part of them, know that they're beautiful. And they don't have to take all that terrible way of being treated.
There's kind of a beautiful resolution to that song, though. It almost sounds like there's a couple different passages, and then at the end, I believe it's the woman's grandmother, her Nukum, who comes in, and it kind of almost offers like a comforting or kind of a safe place at the end from this tale of abuse and discrimination. Can you tell us a little bit about that ending of the song?
Bush Lady, lift up your head from that cold sidewalk. This is your Nokum talking to you.
It's because the experience, as I've watched a lot of people and know how it feels to be on the street. Like, I made a film about that. People in general, not just women. It's called No Address. No matter how down you can be in the dark place and maybe drinking, maybe being lost on the street and badly treated, all that, I want these women to know that they belong to something very special. No matter how bad things are, no matter how terrible places you've been. And Nokum is our grandmother. And I sing as the grandmother's coming to take that woman and maybe in the spirit world, but there's life, and our people are living. These women can be protected.
I know this place where no one cries. I know this place where no one dies.
I wanted to talk about another one of the songs on the album. So the next kind of longer passage that you have on it is a song called Theo. And this is one about your home community of Odanak. And so can you, and this one, of course, is sung in French as well. Tell us about this song.
This is a part of stories that I was told in my village. And Theo was my mother's cousin who had a lot of knowledge about history and was a very special person. And he told me about this massacre that occurred in Odanak, and then I started to study it. And I read Major Rogers' book when he said he exterminated our people at that time. And it was in 1759. And what people know in this province, they know about the Battle of Wolf and Montcalm. But nearly the same time, our people were massacred. They killed a lot of our people in one night. Nobody knows that. And I want that story to be known here, because it happened here. And there was a film made with Spencer Tracy. It was called The Northwest Passage. It's about that story, and it's weird. I don't know why they called it Northwest Passage. But in it, like Spencer Tracy, who plays Major Roger, says we killed them all, the Wabanaki there. But he wasn't right all the way. They did kill a lot of people. But they were advised, like in the song I explain, that this young girl, one of the guide who was guiding Major Roger, who of course was from an enemy tribe, came and warned her about this, that they were watching, and in the nighttime they would be surprised. But not everybody believed her. Some people believed her when she went inside and to tell the people. So a lot of them went to hide, but many of them didn't, and they were all killed, except maybe one or two who managed to get across the river. Mm-hmm. So it's that story, but from our side. And it's proven that Major Roger, he thought he'd kill them all, but he didn't. He didn't know about this warning and how some people went to hide. And this was in the month of October. After September, the battle in the Plains of Abraham was with Wolfe and Montcalm, and the English won, although the Wolfe also got killed. But they won the battle, and this is how everything changed here. And with all the different nation in this province who had to abide by the laws of King George III, and if not, they would be in trouble. Same thing with the French, who they said they could keep their religion, but they would have to go by the laws of the English. So it's history that is important for people to know. But of course, this massacre in our community is unknown. Nobody, when they hear this, they're so surprised. They never heard of it. And for us, it's important. That's part of our history. This is why I made it into a song to tell the story.
Plus tard dans la nuit, le major Roger et ses hommes ont bondi dans le village. Ils ont brûlé toutes les maisons, à l'exception de trois. Parce que c'est là qu'on conservait le maïs pour nourrir les gens durant l'hiver. Ils ont tué beaucoup de monde.
It's incredible because the album is trilingual, so you've got song in English, song in French, and of course songs in your own indigenous language as well. One of those is Odana. Can you tell us about that song?
Odana. Que ma humnunga kistanko ak odi aska miwi odi.
Yes, Odana is the name of our village, Odanak today, which means at the village. It also had another name at that time, Asigontukuk. And the song is about a story that our people, first of all, you have to understand what the territory was. It was all New England, the Maritimes, the Eastern Township, and the southern part of Quebec. So it was a very large territory, and our people traveled. They followed the season and the animals. And it's this man who wrote this song. His name was Louis Gill. That's another interesting story of where that comes from. But he talks about Vermont, when our people in Vermont, now the English were coming and taking over our land all over New England. And it's a story that there was a woman washing the clothes in the river. And as she was washing, she said this beaver came and sat on a rock in front of her. And this beaver started to sing. And he was telling her, I see all you people being thrown out of your land. And some people, they're taller than you. They're coming, taking all over your land. And he made fun of her. And she ran to the area where the people's dwellings were. And she told the people, but they didn't believe her, but he says it really happened. Our people lost, and they lost the land, and they were pushed further and further away in the bush. It's about that. And he says in it, take care of Odana, Odanak, because if you're not careful, again, you're going to be pushed off of it, and there will be no more land for you. So he says that people must love Odanak, take good care and respect it, and make sure it's there for the future generation. That's what it tells. And that story about the beaver telling this woman that, and he says it really happened, although some people did not believe it. So he's saying we have to take good care of Odanak. Otherwise, it could disappear also. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about love for Odanak. Kazalmul means I love you. Kazaldami Odanak, my beloved Odanak.
As I mentioned earlier in the interview, so you've produced and directed over 50 films here at the NFB, and you're currently working on another film. Can you tell us what you're working on right now?
I don't like to talk too much about something that's not finished. But it's for children, and it's about, right now the working title is about a bill that was passed in with the federal government in Ottawa. And it's about Jordan's principle, which is the equal right for children that live on the reserve and don't get equal rights in education and in health services. And it's been a court case that I've done a film on it. It's called We Can't Make the Same Mistake Twice. And now Jordan's going to have his own film. And it's very exciting to see the changes and what's happening right now for our children. And that's what I'm working on.
And of course, you know, your music album was just reissued. You're going to be performing in Montreal in September. Do you have any plans maybe to put out another album after that?
Oh, my God. You know, I to do a concert like I will be doing is not easy for me, and I worry a lot. I just, I'm afraid to disappoint people. You know, all these feelings come. Yeah. I also think of Bush Lady, and I hope that people will develop respect for all our people, no matter what situation they're in. And I want these women to know that they do have a place in this world. They just have to find it. And they don't have to be anybody abuser and service people that they don't have to do that. They've just been told they're supposed to do that, and they believed it, and that's where we have to change. We have to help them and hold their hands. And
well, again, it's an amazing album, and I really do hope that people listen to it because it's such a rich learning experience and listening experience. And again, we've been speaking with Alanis Obomsawin here at the National Film Board in Montreal. Thank you so much again for sharing all these stories with us today.
Thank you. I hope everybody has a lovely day.
All right, welcome back to the Rebel Beat, a Firebrand Records podcast. Hope you enjoyed that incredible interview with the one and only Alanis Obomsawin. Check out her new album, Bush Lady, on Constellation Records. And also, do check out Firebrand Records for their amazing roster of radical artists. They're at firebrandrecords.com. Some big news from them is that Ryan Harvey, Kareem Samara, and Shireen Lilith are about to release their brand new album. It's called Thin Blue Border Volume 2. Can't wait to hear some of those songs. But it is time now in the show for our Turn It Up segment. That's where we look at an artist or an organization who are using their platform for radical social change. And on this month, we are going to give a shout out and Turn It Up to Jeremy Dutcher. So Jeremy is an indigenous Wolastoq musician, and his album, I'm going to try to pronounce this, Wolastoqiyik Lintu Wakonawa, just won the Polaris Prize for Best Canadian Album. Now, Jeremy joins a growing list of indigenous winners of that award, including Buffy St. Marie, Tanya Tagak, and Lito Pimienta, who we interviewed just last year on the show right after she won the Polaris Prize as well. It was so beautiful to hear Jeremy up on stage during his acceptance speech, addressing the gala in his indigenous language in a profound act of decolonization. The album has an amazing story to it, one that we'll hopefully get into in future episodes of The Rebel Beat. And Jeremy, if you're listening, this is an open invite for you to come on the show. But here's Jeremy in his own words just after winning the Polaris Prize.
All of my people, is for you. Gazelle Mokamach. Canada, you are in the midst of indigenous renaissance. Are you ready to hear? Are you ready to hear the truths that need to be told? Are you ready to see the things that need to be seen?
So we'll leave you with one more from Jeremy Dutcher. But before we go,
We're going to thank all of our supporters on Patreon: Donald, Sarah, Dan, Zachary, Ryan, Misha, Aaron, Ross, Camilo, Taylor, DJ Kill McKinley, Scott, Philip, Moti, David, Sasha, Megan, Hunter, Lee, Russell, Sarah, Rose, Justine, Yannick, Andy, Grill, Jean-Philippe, Frank, and Andrew, and Sol. If you like the show, you can support us at patreon.com/rebelbeatradio. We'll be back next month. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah. Thank you.